Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, we talk with Diane Simmons, Chief Learning Officer for the American Academy of Dermatology. This is one of a number of episodes we have planned with people in that CLO role. But before we get to that conversation with Diane, I want to be sure to highlight our annual Leading Learning Symposium. This is an event designed specifically for senior leaders at organizations in the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development. The symposium takes place this year on October 24th and 25th in Baltimore. We have a great group coming together for it. So if you want to find out what the symposium is all about and see the great things that last year's attendees had to say about it, you can go to the event website at symposium.leadinglearning.com. We'd also like to thank Calm Partners, makers of the Elevate Learning platform, for being the sponsor for this episode of the Leading Learning Podcast. You can find out more about Calm Partners at calmpartners.com. Now, Jeff, you had the chance to talk with Diane Simmons, who is not only the CLO of the American Academy of Dermatology, but also a two-time advisor for the Leading Learning Symposium.
That's right. We've known Diane for many years. She's somebody we think very highly of, which is, you know, why we have her involved as an advisor for the symposium. And she really has a very diverse background as an association executive. She's worked at a range of different organizations in a learning role and in an executive role. A lot of that's been in healthcare, nursing, healthcare, finance. But more recently, she's come to the American Academy of Dermatology, so a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool medical society. And we talk quite a bit about continuing education in the medical field and how that differs from other areas and perhaps is a beacon for other areas in terms of what they might consider doing with lifelong learning. And then, as you mentioned, you know, this is a plan for multiple conversations with people in that chief learning officer role. And we've already talked with Kelly Palmer of Degreed, so a CLO in a bit more of a corporate environment. Diane is, of course, in the association environment. And one of the topics that we covered is, you know, why we don't see more CLO type roles in associations. Our own research has shown that less than half of organizations have somebody, whether it's with a CLO title or not, but have somebody in an executive role whose primary focus is learning and education. Just not seeing as much of that as we would certainly think you would at this point. So that's one of the things that that I discussed with Diane. And then, of course, just, you know, her perspective on what's going on out there in the new learning landscape. And as always, she's just a very insightful and interesting person to talk to.
Well, excellent. Let's have a listen to what Diane has to say.
Hey there, this is Jeff Cobb with the Leading Learning Podcast, and I am very pleased to be joined today by Diane Simmons, who is the Chief Learning Officer from the American Academy of Dermatology. Diane, welcome to Leading Learning.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to be here. And, you know, as we always do, we know that you're going to be able to tell folks better who you are and what you do than we can. So I'll ask you, can you tell us just a little bit about the American Academy of Dermatology, who you serve, and what you do there in that chief learning officer role?
Sure. Let me give you just a little bit of an overview. The American Academy of Dermatology represents practicing dermatologists and others who participate in this space throughout the U.S., although we are starting to get a little bit more of an international exposure. There's about 19,000 members. We have a very high penetration rate in terms of membership and an extremely high retention rate for dermatologists, like about 90% or higher tend to retain their membership. It's interesting that when probably like many other associations, when you survey members about their number one benefit of being involved with an association, they talk about professional development, education resources, and other tools that help them practice better in their field. It's a pretty traditional portfolio at the moment, although we've done some innovative things around online education and app development for our members. We do kind of a blend of event-based learning and digital strategies and beginning to really shift that balance to more digital strategies and responding to what seems to be a preference for just-in-time learning and quick, bite-sized chunks of information. The specialty is interesting in that most of the folks who practice in this area are board certified, which is adds another layer of complexity in terms of our education design, but also is beginning to represent a broader care team approach. So other practitioners who have a need for information in on dermatologic conditions and those activities outside of traditional practice. So it's broadening in its scope.
And now I know, you know, you're pretty recent to the American Academy of Dermatology. You've had really a pretty diverse background. I know you've worked with nursing associations. I believe you did that, you know, through working for an association management company. You and I have known each other for quite a while. You were at the Healthcare Financial Management Association when I met you. So what common threads have you seen run through all of the roles that you've served, particularly from the perspective of learning and education?
Well, I think that the thread that's been there consistently and continues to be there is the, you know, the privilege we have really of working with people in professional associations, and that is we get to work with the best and the brightest. We get to work with people who are truly committed to lifelong learning, people who have a need for education, who really want to advance their practice, who want to be better at what they do, and that's true pretty much across the board. As I think about the various groups that I've worked for, that's really pretty much at the sort of baseline for most of those groups. So that piece is pretty consistent. There's some unique challenges with each different group. What I'm finding with working with a medical specialty are all of the sort of external regulatory and certification requirements that impact on practice. And in an evolving healthcare arena, which has been the focus of my work throughout my career, it's a pretty challenging time. Of course, we say that with every new change that's introduced in healthcare, but it really is creating some unique challenges and I think some unique opportunities in terms of how we think about learning and how we think about what people need to practice at the top of their game.
And I've always had the sense, as somebody who's, you know, worked with a lot of medical societies, that in some ways I think of the medical world as almost being ahead of the rest of the world in how they think about continuing education. And I say that because of, you know, concepts like maintenance of certification, performance improvement, the emphasis on quality assurance. I mean, has that been your perspective coming into this world, that maybe the medical world is sort of leading at the cutting edge of continuing education?
Well, that's an interesting perspective. I've found that there are also some very traditional ways in which people expect to get education. One of the things that I think is true about medical societies, because they're so scientifically based, they're very used to a very traditional format in terms of education. Mm-hmm. So breaking out of that a little bit is a little bit challenging. But I think as a profession, by and large, they really have adopted some pretty rigorous standards that have to do with certification and recertification. And, you know, these are very high stakes professions, so the public good is certainly of utmost consideration. Now, there's also a great degree of concern and dissatisfaction and angst about the whole recertification process. But at its core, it really does attempt to self-regulate the profession. That's what it's all about. To do that based on some objective standards and, sort of ensuring that practitioners are really continuing to stay relevant in that field.
Yeah, and I guess that's probably what I have in mind is just aspiring to that very high standard and trying to come up with some ways to set that standard. But like you said, some of the actual practices in terms of how education is delivered in particular, still very, very traditional, definitely. Now tell me, we discussed a little bit before we got on the call that, you just don't encounter the title chief learning officer all that often in the association world. In fact, I'm kind of surprised we don't encounter more than we do. Did that role exist at the Academy before you got there, or did they create that for you?
It did not exist, and I'd like to think they created it specifically for me, but they created it and then were in search of that qualification. Here's the difference, at least in my mind, and I think the way that the Academy leadership is looking at this, and that is we need to expand our vision of what professional development really is within associations and to look for ways in which learning occurs that may not be attached to a product, which I believe is education. So as we think about education, we tend to think about it in terms of a product, a program, or a thing. We're really trying to push that envelope to really acknowledge learning occurs in lots of different ways and really focus more on those kinds of opportunities. We clearly still have a portfolio that's balanced with traditional education, but are beginning to expand out into other arenas that aren't quite as traditional and yet seem to be resonating pretty well. The role for that's been described, the evolution described to me here, what they were attempting to do, and hopefully we're making some inroads here, is to really look at focusing this position on strategy development and planning, to be much more strategic in terms of how we're identifying the educational needs and preferences of our members, to be able to communicate at a level that's consistent with other executives within the space, and also to be, kind of the leader, if you will, for both the staff and the subject matter experts that need to collaborate in different ways to begin expanding the portfolio.
And I mean, that's great that that the Academy has taken that perspective and has actually put it into action by, creating the role and then finding a great person to fill that role. Why is it that, from your perspective, and as somebody who obviously has spent a lot of time in the association world, why don't you think there are more of these positions, chief learning officer, or even for that matter, just executives whose primary focus is learning, regardless of whether they have the CLO title or not?
Boy, that's a good question, I think this notion of thinking about education as a product may not be serving us well. In other words, if we could, even within our within our colleagues and our peers, begin talking about it more as learning propositions, I think we may begin moving that dial a little bit to look at some different opportunities. You know, as I mentioned earlier in my introduction, you know, our two primary strategic priorities for the foreseeable future are, number one, to expand the portfolio of educational offerings, so to continue to look at those programs and services, and then secondly, to expand our audience. Mm-hmm. We feel that there is opportunity and need for us to be recognized as the experts in some other arenas, and to do that in a pragmatic and focused kind of way.
Well, I think, I mean, we've obviously talked about these topics quite a bit, and I think mm-hmm. see them in similar ways. I'm wondering, you know, as you talk to others out there that you know, your peers out there in the association world, what are you seeing people struggling with most? I mean, you talked about, you know, learning as product and kind of getting over that. I mean, are there other things as we you know, talk about this new learning landscape that we're all operating mm-hmm. in. What do you see people really struggling with?
Well, there's a lot. Resources are always an issue in terms of, and it's always intriguing to me. Of course, you know, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But, you know, if you survey every professional association out there, I would suspect that the number one reason that most members would cite for belonging to an association is for access to learning resources, whether that's education or however they describe that. And yet, oftentimes, they're the least resourced mm-hmm. area in the organization, which, you know,
right.
there's a little bit of a disconnect there, right? So
definitely.
If this is our number one reason for being, then, you know. So I think there, you know, I continually hear about resource issues, and I think, and again, this is partly from my recent experience, but I think there's still that dynamic tension between the traditionalists in terms of how education is developed and delivered, and those who are able and willing to experiment a bit and, you know, push the envelope in some different directions. So there's always that kind of dynamic tension between the two, and, you know, as we all know, working in associations, one of the greatest resources we have are our members, and one of our greatest barriers are our members
right.
sometimes in embracing change. And there's lots of reasons for that. You know, I oftentimes think, and especially I think in healthcare right now that is so chaotic and crazy, people come to their association for a sense of normalcy. So, you know, they want predictability. They want, you know, the annual meeting to happen the way the annual meetings always happened. They look for some sense of stability, I think, from their professional association. So it's an interesting time where, you know, there's a need for an expanded view, and yet the member need may be clouded by that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, probably another issue, and I'm sure you experience this, is, like you said, it's interesting times. There is so much mm-hmm. going on right now. There's so many, you know, shiny objects out there, new theories,
right.
new trends. I mean, what do you see out there in terms of potentially, you know, bad influences or, you know, bad advice that's floating around right now that are, you know, potentially distracting people more than helping them out when it comes to pursuing learning in the way that they probably should as organizations?
So that's a really interesting question and insight. I hear a number of my colleagues, and I think to some extent we were guilty of that here as well, pursuing things like technology support, whether that's through an online learning system, learning management system, or other you know, creative ways with apps and so on and so forth. And there's a tendency to pursue the technology because it's, to your point, shiny and new, without really evaluating what the learning needs are and how that's going to be fully utilized. I, you know, our organization implemented a learning management system about a year and a half ago, and I continue to get questions about, so how's it working? You know, you know, what have we done recently with it? And it's like, well, that's not really the question. The question should be, you know, what new learning opportunities are we developing and able to deploy? So that focus on the technology, I think, in some ways is a distraction, and I think folks may have some unrealistic expectations about what simply having the platform will do for them.
Yeah, and it's
so the platform without a strategy is really kind of useless. So, yeah,
and it's amazing once you get staff and board and volunteers and everybody pitching in their two cents on what a technology platform is supposed to do. You often end up with quite a mess. The flip side of that, I mean, you know, some of these things are distractions, but on the other hand, there are things out there, whether it's technology or otherwise, it represents some pretty tremendous opportunities right now. I mean, what has you most excited about, you know, whether it's a trend or just what's going on in the world of learning right now when you think about the possibilities and the opportunities? What really gets you jazzed up right now?
Well, I think the area that we're exploring, and we've done an initial program in this area that we're going to replicate. It's like, if it works, let's beat it to death. But we introduced, and this is through no fault of my own, trust me, but we introduced a program called Question of the Week, where dermatologists get an image, and this is an opt-in program. They get an image presented to them with a choice of responses. They get immediate feedback on whether their choice was correct or not. And so, to me, it's an evidence of real, you know, sort of just-in-time learning. It's very quick. It's very accessible. We've had over 5,000 members opt in for this program, and we're processing over between 2,500 and 3,000 claims a week for credit for those programs, which is amazing, given the volume of opportunities that they have to learn. And what it's suggesting to us is that there's real value in that, sort of quick, accessible, bite-sized self-assessment just a really different kind of learning opportunity. So we're pretty excited about that. We're looking at some things that may be more case study-based that would be, again, smaller bites, but sort of quickly accessible, and looking at other opportunities to really begin leveraging content. So I think the goal here is, we have the platform. Let's find unique ways to make it work, and continually evaluate. One of the things that we did that's not worked out particularly well is developing unique apps based on our clinical practice guidelines. Folks just aren't using it. I mean, it looks cool. They're pretty, they're kind of slick, and sounds great to say we have apps in all these areas, but nobody's using them. So, we try, and then let's redirect and see if there's a different way to do that.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think both the small is beautiful trend and apps are going to be things that people are wrestling with for years to come now, and figuring out how to really get that right. Definitely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe switching gears just a little bit as we kind of head down the home stretch. I mean, you're obviously in a significant leadership role there, and as I said earlier, we've known each other for a while, so I've always known you as a leader, as somebody who thinks of herself that way.
Thank you.
I'd be interested to know. I mean, you strike me as somebody who's probably tried to develop that. Who have you been inspired by, or particularly, who have you particularly admired as you've tried to develop your own leadership capabilities?
You'd given me a sneak preview of the question, and I thought about that. Is there any one person? I think it's more leadership traits that I've resonated with over the years that I've really tried to emulate. And the first attribute that comes to mind is really humility. And I think out of humility comes that curiosity of, you know, what is it? What can be better? How can I learn? Where can I adapt? And, you know, I'm kind of a junkie for programs and opportunities to really assess leadership styles and understand areas that I can do a better job in. And, you know, I have to say those that I've been privileged to lead with and lead over the years have probably been my greatest inspiration and where I've found, you know, really the kinds of things that work well and the things that don't. Most of those have to do with my approach, not necessarily others' abilities. But, and now I will say that in terms of writers, I really like Jim Collins' work that talks about, you know, the kinds of leaders that are required for, you know, for high-performing companies that that really resonated with me.
Yeah, that level five leadership, I think
right.
he calls it.
Yeah. No, aspirational.
Yeah. No,
and on any given day, right?
Right. So he's a good one to read for anybody who has and reread, for that matter. He's a good
right,
one to go back
right.
to. He's got staying power.
So
you just kind of hinted at it a little bit that you're kind of a junkie, as you put it, for looking at assessments and things like that. What else in terms of your own lifelong learning habits? We always like to ask people that on this podcast, this being the Leading Learning Podcast. What do you do for your own lifelong learning?
So a couple of things. I'm kind of a Harvard Business Review junkie, and part of the reason for that is I think it's important for me to look outside my own space. So, you know, and I get a lot of good ideas and information from the association world, and certainly from my colleagues on the Medical Specialty Societies group. But I think it's important for me to look outside to what folks are doing in other arenas. It's not an isolation one size fits all, for sure. So that's been kind of my bent. And I also look for opportunities, and this is a shameless plug for your for the conference, the Leading Learning conference.
But we're fully open to shameless plugs here. Go,
okay, fine. I thought you might be. The value that I got out of that when I attended was, while there were certainly association folks there, there were lots of different entities and different types of organizations involved. And I find that really valuable to, again, get out of our own space and, to think differently. And I'm always eager to look for those opportunities, either, you know, courses, conferences, reading, that have to do with strategy and how strategy evolves and develops, and any models that we can draw from.
Yeah, definitely. So just to wrap up here, appreciate your taking the time to talk today.
My pleasure.
Can you let people know, how they can find the Academy, and also, to the extent that you're open to it, if there's a good way for them to
sure.
connect with you with any questions they might have?
Absolutely. So our website is aad.org, that's the association's website. My personal email is dsimmons@aad.org, and I'd be happy to follow up with anyone.
Well, great. Well, Diane, thanks so much for taking the time to talk today. It's always a pleasure.
That wraps up our interview with Diane Simmons. As we're exiting, we'll mention our fall event, the Leading Learning Symposium, one more time. You can get information about that at symposium.leadinglearning.com. And thanks once again to Comm Partners for sponsoring this podcast episode.
To get show notes for this episode, just go to leadinglearning.com. And while you're there, we'll hope you'll also take advantage of one of the options for subscribing to the podcast on iTunes or another podcatcher of your preference.
We would be grateful if you'd take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. To do that, you can go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. We really appreciate if you would do that, because it does make it much easier for others to find the podcast.
And finally, we hope you'll consider telling others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet simply by going to leadinglearning.com/share. Or if you're not into tweeting, you can just pick another social network and put it in words of your own and get it out there to your audience and tell them all about how great the podcast is.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.